Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme. In this episode, we talk to Rue Irvin, who is a regular TV expert and the main presenter on shows such as BBC Bargain Hunt, BBC Antiques Road Trip and Celebrity Antiques Road Trip. Rue also owns and operates Kilcreggan Antiques in Argyll and Bute. We chat about how we can discover more about ourselves by connecting with the past through antiques, how antiques can create a mindful strategy for living as well as creating perspective on our own challenges. Rue, it's so fantastic to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for your time today. I guess the best place to start is, how did you get into antiques? How did you find this love of old things?
Well, it's a bit of a strange story. I've always loved old things because I've always been an old soul. So when I was a teenager, I was, you know, very much into sort of, you know, I had a very escapist mind and I would always go on flights of fancy. So I've always loved history and the past and undiscovered things. But ironically enough, me and my husband were very much in the corporate world. So up until about 8 years ago, we owned a call centre on the Isle of Man. We were travelling around, we were in marketing, sales, we were very much in the rat race. And about 8 years ago, both of our fathers passed away within 3 weeks of each other. Completely unexpected on my part. Worst day of my life. And we decided for the next few months just to walk away from business. We got rid of the business. We were with our mums for the best part of 6 months, living, you know, at my mum's, trying to, you know, piece them back together. They'd been married in, a total of 100 years. So we had to find our feet again. We'd been with my mum for 5-6 months. We thought, well, we still have to pay the bills. What do we do? And we'd recently become addicted to auctions. And we furnished our big Victorian house from them. And we had so much surplus stuff. I'm just a magpie. My hand is always up in the air at an auction. And my hubby said, well, listen, why don't we start selling some of these on eBay online? So long story short, we did that. It was very successful. Things were going out to Russia and China and Australia. And then we opened up this little shipping container shop in our village in Kilcreggan at the garden centre and opened up our first little antique shop. And I was very hesitant because I thought, look, you know, we only discovered antiques because we discovered auctions and wanted to furnish our house. And that's the first real contact I had with, you know, beautiful antiques that were 100, 200, 300 years old. Otherwise, as an Asian, in our culture, we don't really do antiques. It's an odd thing to say, but in Asian culture, if something is old, it's not worth keeping. You know, it's kind of modern ways to decorate your home. So antiques isn't really a concept that's that understood in traditional Asian, South Asian generations. So that's how we opened up our shop. And then I think it was 2015, Antiques Road Trip called and said, can we come visit your shop? I said, I warn you, it is tiny. They said, no, we're always looking for new places. Along came Paul Laidlaw, and Antiques Road Trip. And a few months later, they said, can we put you forward to become an expert? So through the 5 minutes of TV time, I guess I'm here 5 years later. So it's one of those stories where, you know, from the darkest day of your life, you know, a whole new adventure starts. And I guess it goes to prove that you don't know what life or what that day has in store for you. You know, just when you think you're heading down a path, it will take you down a completely different one.
I was going to say, I'm so sorry to hear about both your fathers dying. That's very sad. But it is amazing sometimes how those moments of change, and particularly grief and loss, make us kind of look for a new adventure or a new beginning to something. That feeling of new start is quite, I think there's quite a normal thing to happen actually in those times.
It is. I think what was so unexpected about it was that I didn't go looking for it, quite the opposite. Probably for about a year after, I really struggled to find my identity again. My dad was my best friend. And we went to a conference about 6 months after, like we used to, and it was full of thousands of people. And I just wanted to hide under the table and not see a soul, because I kind of felt I wasn't sure who I was anymore, going from the corporate world to, you know, idly walking around the house, picking up, you know, if I saw a crumb on the floor or dusting the shelf. And I thought, what's happened? Who am I? This is what I'm doing. I'm looking for things to fill my day. So in a way, not that it saved me, but I don't know what I would have been doing. Probably would have just had the antique shop, and that's more than enough. But it's led me on this completely different adventure that I'm really blessed to be a part of. You know, I feel that there's so many people who've been trying for years to get into it, and it happened accidentally. So I never take a minute for granted.
As Giles says, it's often the things we least expect, or the things we're actually not looking for and that just happen organically, that are actually the most beautiful things and actually end up being really successful without us even necessarily trying. And you mentioned the word, you know, identity, which I think is a really interesting word, because it's so much, our identity is everything, and how we perceive ourselves to be and how other people around us, you know, think of us. So, you know, school friends will remember us in a certain way, and even 20 years later they'll still have those kind of labels, won't they, about who we were at school, and yet we're changing all the time with different groups of friends. And I suppose there's also a link with big life events, big life changes, like you say, with our identity. We naturally will be changed by those things. So whether or not something in us is looking for something new, or looking for a new way of being almost, is interesting. And I guess antiques in the past is all about identity too. It's all about finding identities from the past and kind of understanding maybe who we are through the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are in a way bound by what we do defines our identity, because I know a lot of actors experience this too. When they're out of work or in between jobs, some of them have said, I'm not an actor because I'm not acting right now. So people feel defined by their, you know, career. That seems to define what their identity is. And I think you have to sort of realize that, no, who you are as a person is your identity, not what you do, not what you drive, not what you wear. And people need to separate the two. But with antiques, I mean, it's very much about the story that each piece has to tell you. And I think the reason I love antiques so much is, I mean, like I said, I'm quite an old soul. I'm overly romantic, incredibly sentimental, more so since my dad passed away. I mean, I kiss flowers all the time. I talk to them. I'm a real tree hugger. And I find more connection with nature sometimes than I do with people. But with antiques, you know, I really believe every piece takes on the memories of that person. And as they're passed from person to person to person, which is the nature of an antique, they're pre-loved. I think the item itself gets richer because it's now layered in memories and experiences and joy and tears. I think a good example is one of my favourite things in antiques is Georgian glass. So glass that could be 350, 200 years old. And I have a few pieces myself. But what I love is that drinking is very much an emotive thing. So you can imagine 300 years ago in these beautiful glasses that have survived now, you know, people would be drowning their sorrows or toasting to good news. You know, it's very much an emotional connection. You know, people drink for a reason. So it's almost like the emotions are within the bowl of that glass to me. So I guess I kind of see the magic in antiques. Another example, one of the first antiques I ever found when I did road trip, I was shadowing one of the other experts. We're in this little ramshackle barn in the middle of nowhere, a wild, windy day. And tucked away in this glass cabinet was a watch in a glass box. It was a wristwatch, and it stopped at 8:16 a.m. on the 6th of August, 1945, the exact second that Hiroshima hit. So this wristwatch, I mean, even now talking about it, I've got goosebumps because I think if ever a moment was frozen in time, it was that moment. And we would never know who the wearer was. You know, even if they had a thought go through their mind at that split second. And I think it, the price tag on it was four figures, five figures. I think you can't put a price on something like that because one of the biggest events of our history, and there's the most human element, the most human evidence and reminder of what happened in a glass box in a rundown barn. You know, so.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I'm getting goosebumps.
I think that's incredible. I think with antiques, it's people think of antiques as, you know, stuff my gran had in her attic and brass candlesticks and you know, smelly blankets and Royal Doton figurines. But even, you know, brass candlesticks, I think, well, we don't realise that some of them are 200, 250 years old. We forget that that was the only way to provide light. And, you know, they could have provided, you know, light and comfort to a Waterloo widow, you know, in the 18th century and, you know, writing love letters or writing letters of sadness by candlelight using those same candlesticks. I think it's all too easy in today's day and age to see things as wallpaper and gloss over them and not realise, hold on a minute, where did that come from? That 300 years of, you know, someone loved that, maybe 300 years in a row. We can't just walk past it and take it for granted.
And like you said, objects are actually not, you know, when you say the word antiques, people think of the past, like you say, dusty objects that you kind of go, oh, what's this? Or that's a bit chipped. But actually they're dynamic things, aren't they? They're actually living in the present because like you say, in each one they contain a story or many human stories that have been layered on top of each other. Just like how we go through our individual lives and with things that happen in our lives, you know, difficulties and joys, we also kind of carry that story. So it's fascinating that actually the way you describe an antique is really, I think, how us as individuals kind of develop as well in our own lives. I think it's fascinating the way you describe that.
I mean, in a way, we become richer ourselves because the memories, I always think we're born a blank canvas. And every person you meet, every experience you have, puts a brushstroke of colour onto your canvas, whether it's black or blue or red or magenta, you know, or pineapple, you know, it's and at the end of our lives, our canvases are just these, you know, wild array of colours. And you can't have, you know, you can't have the reds without the blues. You know, you need to have it all. So you're right. We're very, very similar because the experiences and people we have in our life make us richer. And I think with antiques as well, what's fascinating is that they didn't just exist. They weren't just created. They were born in a world in context. So I think with antiques, you have to look at the context of the world that they were created in. Like farthingale chairs, for example, they were created very high seat, no arms, because of the ladies' big farthingale dresses. So it allowed them to perch on there and not be hemmed in by the arms. Victorian mourning jewellery, which is one of my favourite things as well. Queen Victoria, I love what she stood for, who she was, what she pioneered, but she was also a very sensitive soul. And she was with her love, Albert, for 60 years. She loved him, mourned him publicly, and were it not for her emotions and her losing Albert, we wouldn't have mourning jewellery. I mean, it existed hundreds of years before that, but it became popular, putting a lock of someone's hair into a locket or a brooch that you wear with you. Some people find it quite dark and macabre, but I find it quite romantic that it's a way of keeping. It's no different to taking ashes now and turning it into a necklace or, you know, a paperweight. it's just a way of keeping that person close to you. And in a way, you know, people nowadays, my generation, have got pieces of jewellery from their great-grandmothers because it's sentimental. And that's what we do. And I think we need to remember that our retro will become tomorrow's vintage, which will become tomorrow's antique. You know, Art Deco, it seems a couple of decades ago, it's now officially antique. It's over 100 years old.
And there are so many. I was just thinking as you were talking about Victoria and Albert, you know, you think about the Albert Memorial and the Royal Albert Hall, and you think about across the world just how many incredible sculptures, buildings, monuments, things we admire now that were inspired by an emotion from the past, you know, by someone's love or by someone's strife or challenge, or and they're all part of who we are now. So when we go and admire these incredible things, you know, there's a story behind that, and that past kind of emotion is, I think, is held in that, and almost kind of, so in some occasions, actually gives us a framework or a template for how we process emotions or our own stories or our own challenges, which is a beautiful thing, because emotions are then becoming tangible, aren't they? And they're from the past, they're actually there in present life.
Yeah, they're manifesting into like a physical display of that emotion. I mean, before Albert passed away, a lot of the jewellery that she was wearing and was designed was all about romantic, sentimental love, lovers' knots and serpents, which signify undying love and eternity. But then when he passed away, it all became about sort of dark Whitby jet. And even the fashion women were in mourning, they'd be draped in black. You can spot a piece of mourning jewellery. You know, for that time, I think she was in mourning for a few decades before it came, you know, there was a return of new hope and optimism and new life. But for those, you know, for those years, the whole of England was mourning with her. They were all wearing dark pieces of jewellery in respect for their queen and Prince Albert. So that shaped the fashion at the time. One woman's love, you know, it's very powerful, very powerful.
It's incredibly powerful. Yeah, it's and something I've never thought of contemplated before. So it's lovely to be able to think about it now. Going back to those first auctions you went to, what drew you to go into the auction in the first place? But also, what were the sorts of things you were buying? Can you remember?
Oh, let's see. Well, we kind of went out of curiosity. We'd never been to an auction before, together or individually. And I think we'd seen it advertised. I honestly can't even remember how. And it was an evening auction, so it became an evening thing.
Okay.
We'd get dressed up, sit in this cold auction house, overdressed as always for the scenario. And just we kind of went out of curiosity, and then we ended up buying a few things. And I became addicted to cutlery. I mean, I must have had about 400 pieces of fish knives and forks that really I haven't used.
can we come around to your house one day for like tea, afternoon tea, and just use all your cutlery, please?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've got the Royal Albert tea set, Country Rose, speaking of Albert again, which I said, no, I'm going to do afternoon tea for my friends and, you know, put it all out in this beautiful, you know, tea set. And now, sadly, I tend to make, you know, I overcook, I make too much that I want dishes I can bung in the dishwasher, and out come the bog standard dishes and the beautiful Country Rose tea set sits there. So I promised when I did a clear out a few months ago that no, I am going to use this china. And I have. I've made beautiful little sort of drinks in tiny little Art Deco teacups, and you can really get all Alice in Wonderland about it as well. You know, I think if you have quite a vivid creative imagination, you know, we can bring a function, we can make anything functional and still use it again. I think it's a crime, it's an absolute shame to destroy things or to let things sit in a drawer and a shelf and not use them, because the Victorians were very good at it. They had and the Georgians, they had a spoon, they had a utensil for everything, for grapefruit, for olives, for snails, for, you know, there was nothing that, you know, they didn't invent for whatever you might need to do or eat, which is why there's such an abundance of things that people don't use nowadays. You know, we just get in with the same spoon and use it for everything. And I think the joy sometimes is that the decadence in the theatre, and that we can do through our antiques again. We can just occasionally make life theatrical for that one evening because you're giving people memories of what a great night they had. I mean, the house we were in before, it was Victorian, it's modern now. But our dining room was very Edwardian, dark greens, library, antique books, candelabras. And when people would walk in and it was set up all lit by candlelight, you could hear them, you know, just gasp. And they were back in time for those few hours.
And I can imagine that auctions are actually, I mean, I've never been to an auction, but I can imagine they're exciting. They're a bit kind of full of risk. There's a little bit of competitiveness in there as well.
They feel quite scary to me.
Yeah, a lot of psychology and perhaps almost like that little kind of element of, oh, will I go too far in terms of what I bid? So they kind of feel quite exciting and quite risky to me, and scary, Giles. I totally agree with that.
Well, I can imagine going back to Giles's question about, you know, what drew you to them? What were you buying? I can tell that maybe you haven't, I don't know if you've been to one, and a lot of people are put off and daunted by, you know, the fact of, what if I scratch my nose or scratch my head?
Exactly,
and have I just spent a, you know, £7 million Ming vase? And that's definitely, auctioneers say all the time, that is not the case. We will always double check. And people are very clear. Although, when I've been to an auction before, you do get the regular dealers, the ones that buy the high-end stuff. They don't want anyone to know the bidding. And if you watch them, literally, it's not even the blink of an eye. It's a slight millimeter dip of the head.
Really?
Bidding. It's a real skill. So even if...
Oh, I love these secrets. I love hearing these little secrets.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic. And if you are going to go to auctions, set yourself 2 budgets, right? Me being me, Scottish and Asian, I will write things down, say, right, okay, tenner, I want that for a tenner, I want that for a fiver, I want that for 20 quid. And hubby would say, you're not going to get that for £10. I said, I know, but I've got what I want it for, and then what I'll pay for it. And then hopefully you'll get it somewhere in between. But I would advise people not to be put off by auctions. Go and people watch the first time, have a cup of tea, enjoy the vibe, and people watch, and then take part second time round.
A lot of psychology, I think, in auctions as well, like the competitiveness and the, like you say, I mean, setting yourself a budget and what you're prepared to pay for something or what you feel it's worth is one thing. But I think, you know, if you're in that kind of heightened state of excitement and you see something you really love and then someone else is there bidding for it. I mean, it's the same in a clothes shop. You're kind of, I've noticed that if you're in a clothes shop, you know, if you go over to look at a rack of clothes, you'll often find a couple of other people just gravitating towards the same rack of clothes
that
you are, even though they're not necessarily going to buy anything. And people tend to swarm. So I think there's a lot of psychology in that as well.
There is. You're right. Like Black Friday sales. I mean, people knocking each other over for a TV. It's quite crazy. But I think it's almost like poker as well. It's about the psychology of the mind. You'll see two bidders, you know, going up against each other and one getting more frustrated that they're being run up. They're not getting what they want, what they have to have, and they're paying way over the odds for it. But almost as a matter of principle, they don't let it go, which is why sometimes people can be run up at auctions. Someone might not even want something, but they'll want the other dealer to overpay so they have less money to spend on the other stuff. So yeah, it can be quite a fun place to go, especially the small sort of provincial auctions. You can often get some really great deals, as I know going by some of my losses on the antique show trip. There are bargains to be found, folks. Get out there. I am testament to that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It really is. And I guess, you know, we see, you know, antiques shows, programs of as popular as ever. You know, I think we've all got a passion, like you say, for the past and learning about objects or learning about our past through objects, but also that, like you say, that excitement of the auction room. How's it been going from being an antiques dealer to actually being on a TV show?
Oh, well, strangely enough, I always sort of downplay things. And when I had the shop and the little shipping container, yes, I was kind of an antique dealer by name, but I didn't feel it by nature.
Sure.
Compared to some of the high-end antique dealers out there that are dealing with unbelievable pieces of history, you know. I think there's different levels of antiques theatre. So for me to go onto the TV side of things was really quite daunting for me because I thought, do I have enough knowledge? I mean, some people doing the shows are auctioneers or have been collecting since the age of 10, and they literally handle thousands of items a week. And that is the best way to grow your knowledge. So my learning curve was like this, on a really, you know, steep groove upwards. And I guess the way I started really increasing my knowledge base was, I thought, okay, how do I see antiques as a history of everything ever made since the beginning of time. So how do you then suddenly swat up on that in a short space of time? So I thought, okay, context. Let's start with world history, the kings, the queens, the eras, the Jacobean period, you know, the kings, Victorian, Edwardian. What happened in the world at that time that created these antiques that we now buy and sell? So that helped put things into context for me. So, yeah, it was very different going from being an antique dealer in my wee village to, you know, doing TV and then, you know, now presenting as well and having done Mastermind recently in Pointless. 5 years on, guys, it still feels so surreal. And I still can't watch myself. I cringe. I am. I mean, Giles, I've heard, you know, a lot of the tweets that you do. You're very sort of life-affirming. You're very inspirational. And Radha, you as well. You both are really good, pure souls. So you know yourselves how many people are out there that are their own worst critic. We can be our own best friend and our own worst critic, and both voices live within our heads. And often they're at it hammer and tongs, and yeah. You know, the light side has to win over the dark side. So yeah, I have moments now 5 years on where I think I'm just about getting to a point where I think, yeah, I can do this. And I'll get through the end of a long day and be literally skipping down the road. I feel that happy. But then, you know, come round to the start of the season again and there's that knot in your tummy. And I think that's what makes us human, but that also is what keeps us wanting to give our best and never get complacent. You know, it's easy to do. I'll never be a diva, far from it. As long as my dressing room has kittens in it, I'm happy.
Well, I was going to ask, so obviously you were saying before how, you know, objects have a story, and every person who maybe owns that object or it passes through their ownership onto somebody else, it kind of changes or it enhances or causes a change to that object or the nature or energy of that object. I suppose in your, you know, in the last sort of couple of years as you've been doing television and presenting, how do you think you've been changed in a similar way, or have you changed?
I've absolutely tried not to. I think I have changed. That's a really interesting question. I love that question. I always joke that I had two paths in life. I went down the art route, but it was either English Lit and Psychology or art. And I went down the art route. But because of that, the route that I kind of wish I had went down, psychology, I have an inner psychologist that guides me when I'm having those wobbly moments. So she keeps me right, thankfully, because I use the natural sort of powers of, well, not natural powers. I'm a real people watcher. I'm very perceptive when it comes to emotions. I can kind of feel what people feel or what they need to hear as well. And I think in a way, what the way I've changed for the better through doing this is I get so much more joy in giving joy to other people. When I've been filming or meeting people and they come up to me, and, you know, now a stage, I guess, where I get recognized, which still makes me really embarrassed. But there's no better feeling in the world than making a complete stranger smile, or you filmed with them for a few hours. Some of the people that I filmed with through our visits were, I've walked with wolves, went rock climbing, went on the ribs, done some really emotional stories. I become really good friends with these people because you're talking about emotional things. And if you meet a similar soul, then that's it. I believe you're connected for life, you know, through that chance meeting. So probably the way I've changed is that I kind of live for making people smile. It sounds really corny, but I kind of feel that my happiness depends on other people's happiness. So it keeps me in a better place as well. And I don't think I haven't changed for the worse. One question I do like to ask my closest friends is, through moments of getting grumpy or irate, okay, as you get older, do we become less tolerant of people, or are people becoming more annoying?
I might have answered the question itself, I think. That.
Tell me. I want you two to answer for me, because I know you guys are very joyous folk. Is it a mixture of both? I don't know. So I guess I need to remember to be patient, because you never know what someone's going through. And we go through those moments ourselves, and people just manifest those emotions differently. Someone might just be quiet. Someone might be snappy with you, but it's because they may have just had the worst day ever. So just have patience with people. But yeah, to answer your lovely question, Radha, I think it's that I've rediscovered the joy in people again, which is so lovely. And I guess since lockdown too, I've always been into nature, but since lockdown too, I'm really anthropomorphic. I humanize everything. So I name cars, I kiss flowers, I name everything. And I asked myself recently, why do I do this? Why am I, I'm like Louis Wayne. Do you know Louis Wayne? The world, he created the world of cats at their little tea parties. And the movie came out recently with Cumberbatch. And I thought, why am I so anthropomorphic? And I think the world, over the last few years, the more we see through social media and the news, with the world being a smaller place, there can be so much more to get us down and help, you know, make us lose our faith in humanity, that maybe I'm subconsciously making best friends with things that can't hurt you. It's a bizarre theory, I don't know. But maybe, I guess that's why I do find joy in nature and, you know, a full moon or a beautiful sunset, because that's all it can give you, joy.
I can definitely relate to that. And I think that's a really insightful comment actually about, you know, why we do that and kind of trying to find comfort and meaning and a safe space and some sense of perspective and grounding in a world that's really quite challenging at the moment. But I think also when we do that, we end up caring about those things even more, because there's an element of a character, a personality, it's something that's living or with energy that matters. And so actually then we start to care more. And I think when we care more about the things around us, including nature or our objects, or whatever it might be, then we feel happier because we're looking after them. So I think that's a really insightful comment. I've never really thought about it like that, but I think there's definitely something there. And I'm interested in what you said as well about, you know, as we get older, obviously antiques are really old and, you know, they change, they get chipped, they, you know, lose their colour, whatever else. But, you know, we also change as we get older.
And yes, we do. Yeah. We get chipped and, you know, we've become a little bit rough around the edges eventually.
Yeah. You know, like you say, what are there any commonalities, you know, between all of us as we get older? Or are we kind of totally unique in kind of how we sort things out and how we actually age and what our perspective is on life and things? It's fascinating, I think.
I think what you've done, you've struck two really, really good similarities between us and antiques. I think the only thing that is ever certain is the passing of time. That's one thing we can never change, one thing we can never deny. So we age like the antiques. And what you said earlier about us collecting memories and experiences, making us richer through life, like antiques are. And also the fact that, yeah, we do get a little bit chipped around the edges. You know, we end up with a bit of a wobbly leg on the table, you know, a bit of a bad joint. You know, there's a lot of similarities. So, yeah, in a way that maybe we're more similar to these, you know, inanimate objects than we realise. You know, another reason why I guess I'm so anthropomorphic. But lockdown again was a really good example of what you said. We're caring more. There were some amazing photos during lockdown, during the first one, where there was 3-4 months of no cars on the road. You know, some of the most polluted cities, you could see the skylines again. You could see the fish in the River Thames. And there's this one photo, I still can't believe it's real, but it was like a sort of council estate, a rough and ready council estate, and there was about 20 deer just grazing on the grass in people's gardens. And you would never get that. And, you know, people were baking and looking after their neighbours and anyone that was alone, an elderly, that they didn't even know. They were making food parcels and taking them round to complete strangers. And going back to what we said about identity, in a way, we kind of were defined by the good deeds that we did. It kind of, some people maybe they couldn't work. So they're like, who am I? What am I doing? I'm being driven crazy, doing nothing in the house. That they were learning languages and baking endless banana bread and cakes. That's why there was no flour on the shelves. People had to do something to keep learning and keep nurturing their brains as a sort of, I guess, a human need to better ourselves. And then there were those like me who was just happy to do nothing. And I think to myself, oh, to have that year back and be more productive.
I mean, and in answer to your question, people are getting more annoying.
Giles has been, I was wondering what Giles is doing there sitting quietly. He's just been pondering that question.
I wasn't sure whether you would admit to that because you've got this lovely, lovely, warm personality that's out there. And I thought, is he going to burst that bubble or is he going to lie to us all and say, no, people are lovely.
Or maybe it's actually just that we know more about what we want and who
exactly,
we are.
Exactly. No, I think we know more about where we do. And things we don't like, things we do like.
Yeah.
Things we will tolerate and things we won't tolerate.
Yeah, we love respect and compassion and looking, you know, respect for animals and nature and each other. You know, that is what has to happen. And for us, it still blows our mind that there are people that don't have that same mindset. But yeah, no, the same way, I mean, what you're saying about antiques, how they take on people's experiences, that's why if you're quite a spiritual person, there's a lot of people that have handled pieces of jewellery or handled an object and felt, you know, felt a presence through it. Very quickly, I'll tell you a little ghost story. When we had the shop, the antique shop in the shipping container, one of my good friends came in, very spiritual. She came in, she said, oh, do you ever burn anything in here? And I said, what? She said, like incense. I went, no. I said, why? She said, there's something in here. There's a presence in your shop. Me being me, I said, fantastic. So cut long story short, she was in for about an hour and she ended up walking over to this little wooden jewellery box, handmade, not incredibly old, not an antique, maybe 50, 60 years old, 70 years old. And she started to describe Ernie, you know, with a stoop and a stick, and he made this jewellery box in the shape of a house for his wife, Marge, and he's heartbroken because he can't be with her yet. And I said, is he actually standing here right now? You talking to him right now? She said, yeah. She said, it's me, you, and Ernie. And he was attached to this house, according to my friend. And, you know, believe it or not, I mean, we'd probably need an entire other, you know, podcast to talk about that. So much happened. But people can feel things through the items of our past. The same way that you can go to a battle site or, you know, Auschwitz, you know, anywhere that, or even sort of, you know, old deserted hospitals and mental asylums are called, where there's such an abundance of emotion, how can that not stay within the four walls? Or how can that not somehow take on a tangible, you know, mist in a way? It's a spiritual way to look at things. But when you look at things that are unexplainable, there's no reason why antiques can't take on memories and sentiments and emotion. I've seen people come into the shop, be completely drawn to one thing and say, I have to have it.
Well, I was going to mention that actually, that the fact that, you know, why some of us get drawn to certain objects or certain things, you know, there's sometimes no explanation for that. We go in, perhaps we see it visually or perhaps we touch it. Because I think the other thing about antiques, which I find really fascinating, is the textures and the material and actually getting your hands on it and actually feeling the antique. Because sometimes it's actually about the, your, you know, every kind of sense that you might use that really draws you to an object. So you, there's a bit of mindfulness in there, isn't there? There's a bit of kind of sensing in your intuition, perhaps, about what that texture or what that antique actually feels like in your hand, and why we get drawn to it. Sometimes we can't explain just how we get drawn to a story or a film or a lyric in a song. You know, there's something in us which is resonating with that message or that story. And with antiques, it's probably a bit more tricky to unpick exactly why, but there must be something in it that it represents or it symbolizes, or a story that it's kind of showing or showcasing that does align with something in us that perhaps we need to process or understand or just feel part of, maybe.
Absolutely. I think you're right. And I think we're either drawn to an antique or a song or a movie through our heart, sheer emotion, or our mind. You know, say, for example, you're a huge, you know, chess enthusiast and you find an antique chess set from the 1700s, that, you know, that's your mind wanting that because of your skill. Or I think the best reason to be drawn to an antique is something in your soul where, as you said, you're not quite sure why, but there's something in there deeper than you, deep within you, that's been drawn to something. I mean, have you two ever went into an antique shop and just fallen in love with something outright? Or have you been to many antique shops?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't got, like, not so much antiques, but kind of retro kind of stuff. And yeah,
you're more of a retro sort of cool, funky mid-century guy.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah,
I love the way Rue can tell that. Yeah,
I'm interested. I told you I should have been the psychologist. I'm really, I knew everything, guys.
And my wife's a trained interior designer, so she's in charge of how good our house looks. But yeah, we do like deco stuff particularly. We like, and you do. I think you do feel that when you go, and you do feel drawn to certain things. And you know, hopefully, on those nice occasions, you both are drawn to the same thing, and you both want it. You know, especially if you go with someone else.
That's the key to a happy marriage. Is it? That's the key to happy marriage.
Yeah.
I think I get drawn to wood and to sculptures and to probably kind of Middle Eastern and exotic, or kind of Egyptian, Indian kind of.
You're big into elephants as
well.
Oh,
I love elephants.
That your heritage, going by your name.
Yeah, so I'm half Indian, half English, and probably
best of both
I grew
world.
Up with a lot of statues of Indian gods and symbolism, and so I love anything that has any symbolism, a story behind it. I really love wood. I really love the texture of a wooden sculpture or holding wood in my hand, because it's really grounding, I think. Those are the things I really love.
So you would love treen. Have you heard of treen?
No, I haven't. No.
Treen is basically objects made from wood. So basically of the tree. So, you know, when you see beautiful little wooden carvings, animals, snuff boxes, all the small antiques which are made of wood are called treen.
Oh, wow.
So that's what you need to start collecting.
Wow, okay, I love it. You set me on a new path.
Yeah, Giles, you stick with your funky orange tables and chairs, all your cool dude stuff.
This is why Giles and I get on well doing a podcast together, because we like different things, even antiques.
Yeah, Giles is making me feel old. He's far too cool for this, far too cool.
Oh, no. Well, funny enough, my brother-in-law is was an auctioneer. I used to work at Sotheby's and another place in West Sussex. So I'm kind of used to being around antiques. Their house is actually strewn with. He's really into clocks. So we always make a joke when it's when you have to move the hour back or the hour forward, because they've got about 25 clocks they've got to go and change.
And do they have the strike? Do they have do they chime on the hour or every 15 minutes?
On the hour. Some of them on 15 minutes, some are on the hour.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. And the fact that he's obviously worked at Sotheby's, he's going to have a house full of true antiques. No reproduction in his house.
And again, lots of crockery as well.
There's something lovely about antique clocks though, isn't there? Because obviously, you know, time passing, symbolism of time. I think there's something really lovely about the clock actually representing itself in terms of how old it is, or the passing of time, which I absolutely love.
Absolutely. You're right. That's a really good connection, because, again, it's something that's infinite. It will just keep moving even when we're no longer here. And I guess what you were saying about time, it just reminds me of another thing I love about antiques, is that it's kind of the best way to time travel. It's the most romantic way to time travel. And again, like I said, I'm a bit of a soppy soul. I love going to, you know, castles and buildings which are hundreds of thousands of, you know, or thousands of years old. And what I do is I just put my hand on the stone walls and I just close my eyes. Or, you know, if you're holding something in your hand that's hundreds of years old, like a Georgian glass, I close my eyes and I think the only thing that separates me from someone else a thousand years ago is time. My hand is where their hand was. And if you can imagine it was in some Hollywood movie or whatever, you know, you close your eyes, there's one hand touching the same wall to where your hand is touching it, and there's a thousand years between you.
Wow.
But it is a connection that kind of transcends time. So it kind of goes back to what you're saying about the clocks as well, which is really sweet.
I love that. I really love that.
Yeah.
So Rue, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of things through the podcast, but obviously this podcast is all about things I forgot were good for me. So if people are listening and they're thinking, never really got into antiques, don't really understand it, they're just dusty old objects in my grandma's loft, what would you say to them?
Heathens!
even after this episode, even at the end of this episode, what would you say the kind of key factors or key elements as to why antiques, the past, delving into that kind of shared human history, why is that good for us? Why could that help us with our well-being or kind of how we feel?
I think it can help promote mindfulness, that feeling of not taking things for granted, not rushing past things without realizing the past in them. I think life is so fast-paced right now that people don't often stop to appreciate a full moon or roses in the garden or the brass candlesticks, you know, that someone has, you know, written so many love letters to, you know, 300 years ago. I think it's all too easy to be, you know, head down in our devices and forget the beauty of our past that's made us who we are. So it is our past that shaped who we are. And, you know, the last couple of years where we've had, you know, a lot of movements, political movements and things like that, that have made us perhaps more ethical, more humanitarian, is all a very good thing. Our past has made us who we are. But then at the same time, our antiques have made us who we are as well, like Queen Victoria. So I think probably the bit of advice I would give is that just stop for a second. You know, stop running so fast. If only I could take my own advice. Stop for a second and enjoy those moments. I mean, an example is I was away filming last year in this beautiful country estate overlooking the hills of Coventry, stunning gardens. They had a swing in the garden. I was doing a celebrity road trip with Chris Kamara and Jeff Stelling. And there was 10 minutes to kill. And my inner child just wanted to go sit on a swing. I hadn't done it for about 20 years. I sat on that swing and it was the most blissful 10 minutes and I felt like a kid again. So aside from, you know, the advice about, you know, stop and appreciate the antiques and the things that have made us who we are, never let go of that inner child. Sit on that swing, go to the ice cream van, get excited by the ice cream van jingle. I think that's why adult colouring books became the trend a few years ago. Because it's therapeutic. We're feeling like a child again. We don't have the pressures and the expectations of adulthood, you know. So for those few moments, just go back, be a kid a couple of times a day. And if you do want to get into collecting antiques, then do it. We have to preserve the past for our future. And through that comes the respect for our antiques and for each other and our stories.
Oh, that's really lovely. Mm. A lovely way to finish the podcast. Yeah, I really like that idea of pausing, you know. And I think next time I'm in a, you know, in an antique shop or something, you know, just take a bit more time to kind of just really consider those objects and what they've been through.
And handle them, touch them.
Yeah.
As long as obviously they're not, you know, 300-year-old China plates, like in your brother's house. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you're walking around his house while he's making your cuppa and there you are handling his Meissen dinner set.
You won't be invited around for Christmas lunch anymore, Giles, after that.
No.
Yeah, you're like, oh, let's have a Greek plate throwing party. No. but yeah.
Rue, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time today. It's honestly, it's been such a fascinating conversation. And Yeah, thank I've really enjoyed it and got so much out of it. So thank you.
Listen, thank you both too. Just speaking to you for this hour, I can tell we're very much on the same page in terms of our souls and hearts and minds. So good luck to you both and thank you. I've loved talking to you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Rue. So that's the end of another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.